We are ready to look at Genesis 18 and 19. This is our outline we're considering each time of the book of Genesis. We're in the second major section, the patriarchal section, at this moment dealing with the one labeled Abraham, though we're going to see something about the birth of Isaac tonight. We're not yet to that section. We'll come to that a little bit later. Let's review our chapters of where we've been. Chapter 1, 6 days of creation. Chapter 2, man in the garden. Very good. Chapter 3, fall of man, who have Adam and Eve commit sin. Chapter 4, Cain and Abel. Chapter 5, genealogy from Adam to Noah. Now chapter 6 through how many chapters? Chapter what is 6 through 9 deals with the flood. So all of these deal with the flood. Chapter 6, reasons for the flood, in preparation for the flood. Chapter 7, the flood itself. And then chapter 8, Noah comes out of the ark. Chapter 9, God's covenant and Noah's drunkenness. Now that's interesting. We'll talk about a parallel to that here in a moment in chapter 19 perhaps. Chapter 10, nations that came from Noah's sons. Chapter 11 was the Tower of Babel. And then chapter 12, God promised Abraham. You want to remember that chapter especially. Chapter 13, yeah, Abram and Lot return to Canaan. There is that friction between their herdsmen. Chapter 14, there was something Abraham had to get involved in. There's war, yeah, among the kings. Chapter 15, another significant chapter. Yeah, he's assured of the covenant. Chapter 16, Hagar and Ishmael, very good. Chapter 17 was our last one we covered. They sort of stand out in our minds. Circumcision, yeah. So when we go through the rest of the Old Testament, even in the New Testament, where did this thing of circumcision start? Right here, chapter 17. So that's going to stand out in our minds. All right, here's chapter 18. Chapter 18 deals with three men visit with two announcements. Now, as we start off with the chapter, we're going to identify who those three are. I don't mean by that the names, but we're going to try to divide out who they may be by their actions and references to them throughout these chapters and other references in other places, for example, Hebrews 13. We'll get to that here in a second. So here's what happens in chapter 18. There's three men visit Abraham, verses 1 to 8, and then here are the two announcements. The one is about Isaac's birth, and the second is about the destruction of Sodom. Those are the two announcements, and then we see Abram pleads for Sodom in view of the latter announcement. So let's get underway. Let's look at verses 1 through 8. You might underline, and you may wonder, what's the significance of this? We'll make some sense of this a little bit later. You might underline the term Lord here, and we'll make use of that term in a moment. The Lord appeared to him by the terebinth trees of Mamre, as he sat at the door, tent door, in the heat of the day. All right, let's place where he is. Here is Mamre. This is the Dead Sea right here. And this is Mamre. This is where he would have been at Mamre as he is in his tent. It's interesting that he's in a tent. And later we're going to see Lot is in his house, a little more permanent structure. But be that as it may, we'll say more about that a little bit later. And so then verse 2, he lifted up his eyes, and behold, three men were standing by him, whom he saw. And when he saw them, he ran to the door to meet them, and he bowed himself to the ground. Now, who are those three? We'll come back to that a little bit later. And so let's just assume this is our cursory study, our reading of that. All we know thus far is the Lord's appeared to him. We don't know that the Lord's a part of those three men, not yet anyway. And we don't know who these three are. In Abraham's eyes, he sees three men, and so he goes out and he bows himself to them. Now, we'll say something a little bit later and give you a reference on that from the ISBE, International Standard Bible Encyclopedia, which is a pretty standard work, about customs of the day were pretty much across the board that when there were guests, who came by your place, whether it's at your tabernacle, your tent, or your permanent dwelling, you were obligated to show them some hospitality. And thus Abraham does that. So he said, if I found favor in your sight, do not pass on. In other words, let me get you some water, wash your feet. Washing the feet was not a matter of some ritual, as is practiced by some churches. It was because of the dusty roads. It was something either done by the householder or some servant, if he had a servant, and Abraham would have had. But let's wash your feet, and you get some rest. And so he's going to provide a morsel of bread. Now, the interesting phrase there, the morsel of bread, suggests a small portion. And bread doesn't mean merely bread versus meat. It stands for food. And so let me get you a small portion of food, but it turns out to be a feast. Sounds like my mother cooking. Let us get a little something for you to eat, and you have a table spread, and you have more left over than people ate. That's what it ends up being. But be that as it may, so Abram went quickly to Sarah and told her to make ready three measures of fine meal, which is plenty for, so apparently each one of the guests is to have a measure. And so in other words, he's going preparing a large feast for them. He goes out and kills the calf. And so they took butter and the calf, et cetera, and prepared the meal. And they sat and watched them, or was with them as they ate under the terebinth tree. So all right, all we've accomplished in 1 through 8 is they've come and visit, and Abraham's fed them. No announcement yet. We don't know anything about who they are. We're going to see more evidence of that a little bit later. Make sense? Now, let's get ahead of ourselves. And let's turn over to Hebrews chapter 13, if you will. And most think that Hebrews 13 is a reference to this occasion. And so you may question that and say, I'm not convinced, but I think most people, most students think Hebrews 13:2, do not forget to entertain strangers. This is a point about hospitality. Do not forget to entertain strangers, for by so doing, some have unwittingly entertained angels. And the occasion that we know, and the only one that we know of that would fit that, would seem to be the case of Abraham in Genesis 18. That as the angels come, maybe Lot's included in that. We'll get to that in chapter 19. But at this point, he has no evidence that that these are angels. So he's entertaining three men and unaware of the fact that I'm entertaining angels. Is that making sense? Now we'll say more about Hebrews 13:2 in a moment. All right, let's get underway now. And well, let me stop and talk about these three men. Let's do that right now. They seem to be, in chapter 13 in verse 2, identified as angels. Now, two of the three later, let's just assume for illustration that we have got through chapter 18. We haven't got there yet, but we're through with 18, and we're ready to roll into 19. And the two of the three that left Abram and head down to Sodom to go and investigate Sodom are described as being two angels. So Abraham doesn't know that at our point where we left him. We've left Abraham over here and they're eating together. He doesn't know that yet. But they're identified as angels in chapter 19 and verse 1. And if Hebrews 13:2 is talking about this event, which I'm convinced is, they're identified as angels. Make sense? All right. We're not through. It's likely that two of those were created angels and one was the Lord in the form of an angel or form of a man. You say, what makes you think that? Well, let's go back at verse 1 of chapter 18. Now, you may not agree with this, but this seems a little strange to me if this is not the case. I had you to underline the word Lord. Now, let's drop down to verse 10. And he said, now the three men are there, but he said that he must have reference to the Lord of verse 1. Verse 13, verse 17, verse 22, all speak of the Lord said. The Lord said to Abram, verse 13. And the Lord said at verse 17, verse 22, we again said that Abraham stood before the Lord. And all the reference we've had is three men being there. One of those must be the Lord. Now, it's interesting that in that conversation, I'm getting ahead of myself, at Luke verse 25, as Abram is in conversation, he identifies at least one of them as the judge of all the earth. He thinks he's speaking to the Lord. Does Abraham know at this point who these men are? I think he does. But at first, he did not. Is that making sense? seems to be the Lord. Chapter 19, verse 1, Abraham is left talking to the Lord, and two went on who are identified as angels. You say, I'm convinced they were all just three men. Have at it. I've got to figure out where these angels come from then. And you say, well, I don't think either one of them is the Lord. Then three men come, but in the conversation, Abram thinks he's talking to the Lord. Maybe he's thinking he's talking to a representative of the Lord. I'll buy that. I think one of them is, in some sense, the Lord. It asked me to explain the details of that. I've told you about as much as I know. Now, we're going to give some evidence as we go along, and here's the first. Let's go back to our outline here and start at verse 9, the announcement. There are two things I want to point out to you that should be key signs to Abram. These are not just ordinary men. And one of them is, at verse 9, they said to him, "Where is Sarah, your wife?" They had no way of knowing her name. Not men, not mere men. They're passing by. Abraham goes out and says, "Come in and eat with me, and let me fix for you. And where is Sarah, your wife?" And he said, "Here in the tent." And he said, I think referring back to God or the Lord at verse 1, "I will certainly return to you according to the time of life, and behold, Sarah, your wife, shall have a son." Now, God's already told them that, but here is the assurance. Where is Sarah at the time this is being said? Within hearing distance. I know that because the next verse is going to tell me, next verses, in the tent. She's not out there standing face to face with these three men. But the Lord said, through these three men, that Sarah, your wife's going to have a son. Sarah was listening in the tent, which was behind him. She's in hearing distance, right behind him. Making sense? Now notice what the text says. Abram and Sarah were well advanced in age. We already know that. And Sarah was past the age of childbearing. So she is not typically going to be able to have a child because she's well beyond those years. And so Sarah laughed within herself. She didn't laugh out loud. Now, have you ever, when somebody said something to you, you're thinking to yourself and you're laughing, but you don't want them to know you're laughing at them? And they don't know that. You're thinking, yeah, you're silly. But you're not saying that. She's laughing where? Within herself. She's thinking that. So what does she think? Verse 12. "After I'm grown, shall I have pleasure, my Lord, being also Lord old also?" A couple of things to point out. One is she refers to her husband Abraham as her Lord, ruler. It's reverence and respect and her submission. But this word pleasure, without being graphic, has reference to sexual pleasure, according to Brown, Driver, and Briggs, and I think they're correct about that. In other words, at this age, again, not trying to be graphic, but that is a biblical subject, at this age, am I going to have sexual pleasure and have a relationship with my husband? Look how old he is and look how old I am. Is that going to happen? Now, well, I lost my place here. Then verse 13, "The Lord said to Abram, why did Sarah laugh?" Now here's your second indication. These men are not just mere men. What is it? They knew Sarah laughed, but she only laughed within herself. In other words, we know what she was thinking. She's in that tent in there, and her reaction was she laughed. And why did she laugh? Now let's stop and talk about her laughter just for a moment. Abraham, chapter 17, verse 17, laughed, we mentioned this last time, seemingly with joy and with amazement. He doesn't seem to be rebuked for his laughter. It's a different type of laughter. But she's laughing in disbelief. Does that make sense? It's a different kind of laugh. And the Lord responded by saying, "Is anything too hard for the Lord?" Interesting question. "At the appointed time, I'll return to you." I will return. Not that God will return to you, but I will return to you. The Lord seems to be speaking, doesn't he? It says the Lord was. But he was part of those three men. And Sarah shall have a son. Now, what did Sarah do? Verse 15, and why? We have a question on that somewhere. Yeah, she denied that she laughed. I didn't laugh. And why is she doing that? Yeah, she's afraid. She's doing that out of fear. These are not perfect people. We're going to see more evidence of that in chapter 19. But I want you to focus on the two things. They knew her name and they knew what she was thinking. These are not ordinary men. If Abram hasn't already figured it out, and I think he has, that these are angels of God, and one of them is either a direct spokesman or is the Lord himself appearing. Does that make sense? Because the Lord is talking to him, but the only evidence is three men have come. Now, we're going to have another evidence of that here in just a moment. Making sense? All right, now let's talk about the announcement of the destruction of Sodom. Now, beginning at verse 16, the men arose from there and looked towards Sodom, and Abraham went with him. We'll talk about the location of Sodom. There are various locations of Sodom. We'll talk about I'll get to that later. But there's some more modern concepts about where Sodom may be thought of as the current thought. But anyway, let's just forget where Sodom is at the moment. And the Lord said, "Shall I hide from Abraham what I'm doing?" In other words, what I'm planning. Now, what does verse 18 tell you about Abraham? And what does that have to do with this announcement? This is God saying, basically, this is why I am going to tell Abraham what I've got planned. It's not going to be a surprise to him what I've got planned. I'm going to tell him, I'm going to reveal to him what I've planned, and here's why. What's the why? Yeah, look at verse that that he'll become a great and a mighty nation, and all nations of the earth will be blessed through him, because it's through this man that the whole nations of the earth, every one of the earth, will be blessed. That includes Abraham himself. If Abraham is forgiven of his sins, it's going to be on the basis of the sacrifice of Christ that's going to come later on. Does that make sense? Everybody on the face of the earth will be blessed through the descendants of Abraham, because he's that man. And all are going to be blessed, and he'll command his children after him that they may keep the ways of the Lord to do righteousness and justice. The Lord may bring Abram what he has spoken to him. In other words, what we saw in Genesis 12, the promise that was given of the land, the seed, the nation, all is going to come through him. Because of that, I'm going to reveal to Abraham what's going on. Now, go back to verse 19 just for a moment. I have known him, the New King James says. But the English Standard says, I think I'm right on this, correct me, those of you who are using that, says, I have chosen him. I have known him, I have chosen him. That's not a contradiction, it means the same thing. And so I've chosen him to be the one through whom the Messiah is coming. And because of that, I'm going to reveal all that to him. Now then, verse 20. Now this gets interesting, because here's your third evidence that we've been talking about, the third leg of that. That the Lord said, because the outcry against Sodom and Gomorrah is great, and because their sin is very grievous. What does the word grievous mean? It's used, not that same word, this would be a Hebrew word, but same word is used in 2 Timothy chapter 3. The times are grievous, are troublesome. All right, yeah, very grave, very serious, burdensome. It's the idea of very troublesome. It's the word perilous in the New Testament is translated grievous or troublesome or burdensome. This is very troubling. It's disturbing to society. And the outcry of at least, for lack of better expression, halfway decent people in the society are looking at what's going on in Sodom that we're about to be introduced to, is saying it's terrible, and God is saying that, look at now at verse 21, I will go down and see whether they have done altogether according to the outcry. If it is, like the report is coming. Now this is God speaking. Now God already knows what it's like because God knows all things. So how do we deal with that? I think this is, for the vantage point of mankind, I want to word this carefully so I'm trying to be clear. For the benefit of mankind, who is going to see the outcry, that the Lord investigated what was going on in the city to see for himself, even though God already knows. That makes sense? so that mankind knows that. That's one thing. The second thing that I want to suggest to you, this is the, one of the ways that God's going to do that is through these men, these two angels that end up going. God said, now let's go back to verse 21, I will go down and see. For years I've read that and thought, okay, yeah, God's going to look down and he's going to investigate and see. But how did he do that? He did that through these two angels that went. Does that make sense? I'm going to go down and see whether they've done all together according to the outcry. Let me paraphrase. I'm going to go investigate to see if it's as bad as they're saying it is. So the two angels go over there. It's perhaps not only as bad, it's worse than they've said it is. Does that make sense? They get over there and it's terrible because these men are under attack. These angels are under attack. So how did God do that? Through these two men. So here's a third leg of that evidence to Abraham. That Abraham sees, okay, they knew my wife's name. They knew she laughed. They couldn't hear that. And if you ask Sarah, did you laugh? No, I didn't laugh. I was thinking that and they knew what I thought. And then I'm going to go down and investigate. And so when God investigates, he's actually sending these men to investigate, these angels. These men must be from God. Is that making sense? I'm trying to build evidence that Abraham should have seen. By this point, these are angels of God. Does that make sense? Yes, sir. Well, that's true. That's true. Absolutely. But that's interesting to me that he's going to send those two men. So these men turned away from there and went toward Sodom, but Abram stood before the Lord. Now, how many men left? It didn't say here, but we get to 19 verse 2, two men went. And Abram's talking before the Lord. And Abram addresses the one to whom he's speaking as the judge of all the earth. Does that make sense? Now, whether you agree or not, I'm just trying to build some evidence for this point right here where we talked about that one perhaps is the Lord. All right. Now, let's talk about Abraham's plea for Sodom. What do you think Abraham's first thought was when God says to him, or these men say to him, and that is God speaking, I'm going to go destroy Sodom. It's terrible. And I'm going to go investigate, but if it's what they say, I'm going to utterly destroy it. What do you think his first thought is? It's because of Lot over there. He's got a nephew over there that has a family. He's got grown children. And some have suggested perhaps even grandchildren, though they're not mentioned. That is, that Lot may have had grandchildren involved. We don't know about that. But my point is that he's thinking about family over there, and they're going to be destroyed. So he begins to reason with God. And he said, would you destroy the righteous with the wicked? In other words, I've got some family over there that are godly people. You say, well, I don't see that there's a lot of godliness in Lot. Well, not in chapter 19, but 2 Peter. Peter calls him a righteous man. How do you harmonize that? I think we have to look at the context, the areas wherein he was righteous. Was he a righteous man? Well, the text says so. Was he always in all actions righteous? No. No. Anyway, let's work through the rest of this because I want to get to chapter 19. So what does Abraham say in his plea here? All right. Yeah, he starts reasoning with God. Would you spare for 50 people? And God says yes. Now look at verse 27. I would spare it for 50. I made a marginal note at verse 27, the humility of Abraham. And that is, indeed now, I who am but dust and ashes have taken upon myself to speak to the Lord. In other words, I'm going to paraphrase what I think he's saying. I'm not in a position to argue with God. You're the judge of all the earth, and I'm not in a position. I'm just made of dust. I'm nothing in comparison to you, but I'm begging and pleading, would you spare them if there were 50 righteous souls? And God said, yes. Well, what about 45? And then verse 29, what about 40? And then what about 30? And what about 20? And each time God said, what about 10? And God says, yes. Now then, verse 33. So the Lord went his way as soon as he had finished speaking with Abraham, and Abraham returned to his place. Then the scene shifts. All right. Now I want to stop just for a moment while we got the 10 on our mind. I want to go right here. Let me get ahead of myself. What Lot could have done, and you may be reading from five different commentaries, and you may have five different conclusions on the number of people. Some say as few as six in his family. Some say as many as 10. I'll tell you how we got people get to that number. You start with Lot and his wife. That's obviously two. And then he had married daughters, apparently, because the text speaks of his sons-in-laws. Sons, plural. So that's at least two. There could have been more, but we're going to have to go with a minimal number. So that's two. So if he has two daughters that are married and two sons-in-law, now we're at six. And apparently there were two daughters that are mentioned that are at the conclusion of the chapter that were virgins, which means they were unmarried. So that makes a total of eight. And if he could have led his whole family, if he had influenced his whole family to be righteous and converted just two of the neighbors, that makes 10, the city could have been spared. Now, Willis argues that there's a possibility that chapter 19, verse 12 suggests maybe there were two sons. I'm not sure about that. He says that's not for sure, but that's a possibility. Others suggest it does refer that there were sons, plural, at least two, that would have made 10 just in his family. But let's go with some say as many as few as six. They just needed to convert four people to be righteous and believe in the God Almighty, and they could have spared the city. And there wasn't even 10 righteous people in the entire city. That's sad. He apparently had not influenced because all that came out, apparently, was Lot and his wife and the two unmarried daughters. So he had two married daughters and two sons-in-laws, and if he had sons, none of them came out of the city. There wasn't enough to salvage the city. How sad. Does that make sense? Just a sad story, I think. Now, let's go right here. Let's go to chapter 19. What's going on in chapter 19? This one should stand out when we go back through our chapter titles 3 weeks from now, 4 weeks from now, 5 weeks from now. Chapter 19, immediately we should think of destruction of Sodom and Gomorrah. This is an outstanding chapter. All right. Now the two angels, remember we left one talking to Abraham. We think that was one. And so now the two angels, that's the two that left, came to Sodom that evening. So let's get verses 1 to 3. They came to Lot, and Lot bowed himself down to the ground, and he encouraged them to come and stay with him. And they said they'd spend the night in the open square, but he reasoned with them not to do that. And so they came to his house, and they ate, and they settled in with him. Perhaps he didn't want them to stay in the open square. Some suggest the open square was a place where travelers could spend the night. But Lot must have known that wouldn't be safe for these men. This is not where you need to be. You need to come to my house. Now, let's go to verse 4. Verse 4, the men of the city make an evil request at Lot's door. See if we can make some sense of this. You might circle or underline the word men at verse 4 and verse 5, the word men. And this is a case where you have men with men sexually. For these men laid down, the men of Sodom, both young and old, from every quarter surrounded the house, and they called out to Lot, where are the men who came to you tonight? Bring them out that we may know them carnally. The New Century, the New Living Translation, and Holman Christian said, translate that we may have sex with them. If that's not homosexuality. By the way, some of the modernists talk about Genesis 19 and said the problem with Sodom was a lack of hospitality. That was the sin. Wow. I don't know what translation they're reading from. Probably none, but That's the problem. But this was homosexuality is what this is. This is men wanting to have sex with other men. And thus, the term sodomy, based on the city of Sodom. Now, Lot went out in the doorway, and what did Lot do at verse 8? Yeah, he begs him not to harm these men. See now, he said, don't do so wickedly. He thought this was wicked behavior. And he said, I have two daughters who've not known a man, and so let me bring them out to you. You may do with them as you wish. Only do nothing to these men. Now that's unconscionable. That's uncalled for. There is no way on earth anybody can justify a Lot in that behavior. So why did he do that? Do you remember Abraham and Sarah had been influenced by culture? And yet Lot pitched his tent toward a more corrupt society, and he no doubt was influenced by culture. There are three things why he may have done that. Number one, it was the host obligation to defend his guest at all cost. Now, we may not feel that way in our society, especially if you had a stranger staying with you and you may try to defend them, but you certainly wouldn't do that at the expense of your family. But nonetheless, ISBE, volume 3, page 1432, suggests that was a very high requirement generally in society. You as a host had to defend your guest. And he's going to do that at all costs. Secondly, this was not from God. This was not from righteous people. This is from culture. Women were viewed as inferior to men. So better to take my daughters who are inferior to a man than for you to violate these men. You say, I cannot imagine, nor can I. But if you've been influenced by culture, who constantly tells you that women are inferior to men, these men are of more value, even though they're strangers, than your own daughters, why not offer your daughters? One writer said how unconscionable that he would do this if he needed to offer some person to be abused sexually. Why didn't he offer himself? That's interesting. He didn't do that. And the third thing is because he recognizes what Lot's offering for them to do is wicked. But in his eyes, what they were wanting to do is far more wicked than them abusing these women. I'm not saying God viewed it that way. I'm not saying that Lot should have viewed it that way. I'm saying Lot viewed it that way. Does that make that there's a difference? That men with men is far worse and more wicked than for you to abuse my daughters. So you abuse them instead of. No way on earth we can justify the ungodliness that he offered. Now, the men of Sodom didn't much like that. Verse 9, what's their view of Lot now? Not much, yeah. Basically, they say, well, who made you the boss, I guess? Isn't that kind of what they're saying? This guy that's come in among you, they're speaking of Lot. This one came to sojourn, and he keeps acting like a judge. And now we will deal with you worse than with them. In other words, we wanted to bring these men out and know them carnally. We wanted to abuse them sexually, and we'll get you and be worse on you than we were going to be on them. It's a threat to Lot. And they came near to breaking down the door. The men, that is these two angels, reached out and pulled him within, and they shut the door. Now, verse 11 is one of the worst pictures of how gross men reach sin. What happened to the men outside? Here's your fourth evidence these men are from God. Struck them blind, and now these blind homosexuals out there are doing what? Yeah, they're groping at the door trying to get back in the door. Instead of going home, because we've been struck blind, they want to commit homosexuality so bad, they're trying to tear the door down with blind eyes just so they can get to these men. Now, let's tie that back to chapter 18, verse 21. What were these two men going to do? see if it's as bad as the report was. If there hadn't been any decision at all, there already has been a decision, by the way, but if there hadn't have been, the decision is made at this point, it's bad. And destruction is coming. Well, let's move on. Let's talk about the destruction of Sodom and Gomorrah, beginning at verse 12. Now, let's talk about Sodom for a moment, where it's located. There are three different locations. In fact, there's probably more than that. You do a little research on where is Sodom, and you're going to find one reference says this, and you think you've nailed it down, and then you go over to another one, and they've got a different total location miles from there. Right here is where the common thought is that this, I think this is from Logos Bible Software, that the cities of Sodom and Gomorrah are under the shallow end of the Dead Sea. Does that make sense? That it wouldn't have been underwater at the time, but now it's underwater down at the shallow end. And then we're going to see the city Zoar, which is just below that. Well, Zoar is not 100% where it's located. Now, if I can get my little dot to work, some think that Gomorrah is right here. I don't have it on the map, and that Zoar is just below that. So some think it's within this little mouth or this little opening here. Now, Willis, in his work, I've got it with me, big, like a 900-page volume one, and there's about 900 pages of volume two, his third work on the book of Genesis, he cites several pages where he talks about more recent studies in the 2000s think that they have identified Sodom on up in this region, easily viewed across, maybe even nearly to the northern part, somewhere in this region is where they think they have discovered it. So where was it? My answer is, I'm not sure. But anyway, for what that's worth, that's Sodom and Gomorrah's location. Not far from there was the city of Zoar. So let's get underway now, beginning at verse 12. So the men of Lot said to Lot, "Have you anyone else here, sons-in-law, your sons, your daughters, whoever you have in the city? Take them out of this place." And so here is the destruction is coming. The decision has been made. You get your family, get them out of here. Now, let's go back to verse 12, your sons. Is that just a general statement? If you have any sons, these are angels. These are not God, but these are angels who have power. So did they know of that? I'll let you make of that what you wish. Did they know of some sons, or I don't know. For we will destroy this place because of the outcry is great against it. So Lot went and spoke to his sons-in-law. What was the reaction? Yeah, they laughed, basically. Yeah, you kid. Yeah, destruction's coming here. Which seems to me to imply that they have been influenced by culture. That when they're told the story, we've had visit from angels, or two men came and let me tell you how bad it was, and they said the city's going to be destroyed. These men must be from God. They just laugh about that. All right? So when the morning dawned, the angels told Lot, "Arise, take your wife and your two daughters who are here." In other words, I think take that to be the two daughters still living at home, the virgins, "and lest you be consumed in the city." Now look at verse 16. I see a contrast between Abraham and Lot. What are you seeing? What kind of contrast are you seeing? Absolutely. Abraham was told to go. He immediately went, and Lot lingered, the text said. The text says he lingered. He delayed a little bit. We'll see a little more about that as we go along. Notice at verse 17. They were told to escape for your life and do not look behind you, nor stay anywhere in the plain. Escape to the mountains, lest you be destroyed. You got to get out of here. It's about to happen. You're about to be destroyed. Get out of here. Flee. Don't look behind you. Pretty simple. Now, what did Lot say beginning at verse 19? Yeah, here's a small city. Apparently small in population. Can I go there? He thought it was too hard to go to the city. I see again a contrast in Abraham. He feared that he wouldn't make it to the mountains. He said, "Lest something happen to me." I'm paraphrasing that, of course, at verse 19 and 20. and let me escape there, and my soul shall live. And that, in other words, he's afraid something will happen to him by the time he gets to the mount. I don't think I can make it to the mount. Abraham didn't seem to care too much about whether he was going to make it. He just took off and went. What a difference in these two men. But he was righteous enough, the Lord wanted to spare him. And let's see, what else do we want to mention here? Verse 22. They were told to hurry and escape. What did the angels do? Took them by the hand and led them out of the city and told them not to look behind them. Now let's begin at verse 20. We're down at verse 24. The Lord, here's what I'm looking for. Verse 24, the Lord rained brimstone and fire on Sodom and Gomorrah out of heavens. In other words, the city's gone and overthrown. Now look at verse 26. What do you see at verse 26? Yeah, she looked back. Luke chapter 7, I think it is, verse 32, 17 and 32, says what? Remember Lot's wife. Now she was told back at verse 17, look not behind you, escape for your life. She did, and she turned to a pillar of salt. Now let's drop down. Abraham looked and he could see smoke burning like a furnace, so he knew he was being destroyed. And it came to pass that when God destroyed the cities, God remembered Abraham and sent Lot out of the midst of the overthrow. What does that tell you? Why was Lot rescued? Because of Abraham, exactly. For Abraham's sake. Because of Abraham, God spared him. Not because Lot had made wise choices. And it may be that we're being spared because of somebody else. And not because of our wisdom. Now let's get the last section and we'll be done. Lot's daughters, so all that's left now. Lot could have spared the whole city and he didn't even spare his home family. All's left now is him and two virgin daughters. There's no sons-in-laws now. There's no married daughters. And there's no wife anymore. It's just him and his two daughters. And they decide that they need to have children and no one to have children by. So what's their plan? They're going to have children by their father. So the eldest gets him drunk and lies with him. And then the next night, the youngest gets him drunk and has children by him. Now some suggest that he was not responsible at all for this. I think he is responsible. He was responsible for the drinking that got him to that state. He's responsible for the culture that he put his daughters in so that they would even think that. These are the daughters who, by the way, he offered to those scoundrels at the door. And so what would you expect of daughters raised by a man that offers them to the whoremongers out there? But anyway, look at verse 37. The first son, let's get these sons and we're done. The first son's name was Moab, the father of the Moabites. And the second one's name was Ben-Ammi, father of the Ammonites, right here. So here we are at the, that's not what I meant to do. Here we are at the Dead Sea again, and here's just south of or east of the Dead Sea, and just a little north of that is the Ammonites, the Moabites, right here, just close to the Dead Sea. And we'll come to them again and again and again about the land of Moab and the people of Moab and the Ammonites being the enemies, etc. Absolutely. Yeah, this is our introduction to them, but this isn't the end of them. It's going to be a problem, as Tom just said. All right, that's it.